You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
This is Kira Sultanovich, by the way, on The Brian Callen Show. I keep going.
And
welcome, I should say.
You know, thank you. I feel very welcome.
No, I'm talking to my listeners, all 1 million of them.
Wow.
No, but Kira, welcome.
Wow.
Kira Sultanovich.
Well, if there are any of my dozens of listeners listening, you've done colleges, right?
Yeah.
You know, so like sometimes a kid picks you up, like just one of the students pick you from the airport.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And there was this crazy, terrible storm. And this one guy picked me up and we barely made it to campus in time. I mean, and we had like 2-3 hours of time, but we were going 10 miles an hour. And it was just scary, right?
Right.
I did the gig and that night, another huge storm came in, and he said, look, I have class tomorrow when your flight leaves, so I can't drive you, but Rebecca is going to drive you. And I said, no problem. And I literally looked around like you do, like in a movie or a sitcom where you're like, where's Rebecca?
Yeah.
And Rebecca was at my knees. And Rebecca picked me up the next day in her car that has
those special pedals
that come all the way up.
That would make me nervous in a snowstorm.
No, that would make me, what? That would make me nervous on a scooter.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
In a snowstorm.
Because
on
she's
top
probably
of that?
Not that athletic, and her reaction time may not be as fast as a normal person, per se.
Well, she was very confident. And and we were like fishtailing. What's it called? Fish hooking or fishtailing?
Yeah, fishtailing.
We were fishing, whatever we were doing.
Fishing.
We were all over the roads the same way we were on the way up with this dude that
did
was
you,
able-bodied.
Did you scream, drive taller? Is that too much? Is that too much? I apologize.
But I mean, there was definitely a look on my face of like, no, come on, who's driving me tomorrow to the airport? Come on.
Yeah.
And they were like, Rebecca.
You know, I know a couple of comics who are, you know, I guess they had birth defects and issues and stuff. And well, the two that I know, it's interesting because they're so confident and they're actually pretty funny. I'm saying this like as if because you have a birth defect you're not funny. I hate this whole conversation because I can't. The whole thing is annoying. It's like they have a birth defect and they can wipe their nose.
Can you believe
it's so exciting.
It? They're leading a normal life. I think that they
what I'm trying to say is sometimes you see people who are like, I saw a guy who didn't have a nose.
Right.
He lost his nose to cancer and he was a paramedic on a film crew on this film I did. I don't know if you know, I do film. And it was a motion picture that you... Anyway, so I said, how'd you lose your nose? He goes, cancer. I was a fireman. Probably the stuff I breathed in. I said, oh, geez, man, it's crazy. We started talking. He started talking with his kids, his grandkids. And I said, I got to tell you, man, you don't seem like you are remotely, you know, I guess bunched up about your nose. He goes, I'm blessed, bro. I'm just going to throw on a prosthetic. I mean, I've seen people burn alive. You think this is this? Listen, it's called perspective. I was like, gee whiz, though. I really like my nose.
Wait, but did he say he was going to throw on a prosthetic? Like he had like
a few
to choose from, like a wig. Like today,
they have
Middle Eastern.
Yes, they have prosthetics for one's nose.
Can you imagine if he was like, "Hey, I want to join this country club," and they're a little bit, so I'm going to put on my white nose today. Like, is that like an option for him?
I'm going to put on my waspy nose.
Because if that's the case, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And as an actor, who wouldn't want that?
Well, they're growing noses and ears now.
What do you mean?
They are growing in petri dishes. In fact, on the backs of mice, they are growing ears and different appendages, including organs. Well, they're trying to grow organs. They're not quite there yet.
On the back of a mouse?
Yeah, it's the weirdest, craziest
thing
in the
world. Why would you
using, I think, stem cell research and things like that. But they are, that what they in fact do is spray cartilage from a dead person's ear or just whatever, and they spray it with stem cells, and then it grows.
What, you mean like when you fertilize your lawn?
Yeah, you're goddamn right. That's what I mean.
There's no way. Now you're just making this
I'm
up.
Not.
There's
I'm
no,
telling
you.
You
can't spray it. It's not like that bald spot hairspray thing.
You,
that
look,
like,
yes, they
grew hair all
they
of
are,
a sudden.
They are literally
that's,
doing that.
That's
it's
paint.
Expensive, but that's no. where that's the front, new frontier of medicine.
Really?
Yeah, you learn a lot on this show.
I could be done right now, and I feel like I got my money's worth.
It's crazy, right?
That's a little insane. But I'm all for stem cell research. I just feel bad for the mice. That's a little jacked up.
Yeah. Well,
can't we do stem cell research on like really hardcore convicts? Like you murdered 100 people.
Well, we do.
Sit still.
Well, pharmaceutical companies, in fact, when they use control groups. A lot of times they use, believe it or not, the big secret is they use convicts and homeless people. And it's not that they're so much coerced, but they are, you know, there's an incentive there. It's
right.
not a lot of money, but a lot of times I'll pay them $200 a day or something to test out their drugs on those kinds of people.
So these poor homeless people don't have a place to sleep. They don't have enough food.
Yeah.
But the Olestra that they are eating is giving them anal leakage.
That's,
they cannot catch a break.
That's exactly right. And guess what? When you're complaining about your anal leakage, stop being homeless.
Really?
Okay, get a job. That's
you know
what they
what?
Say.
And I'm sitting here judging the dude with stains in his pants. That was just a focus group.
Just a focus
that went awry. And I'm standing here judging this guy.
Do you
it's
know
all
what,
perspective.
Do you know what I appreciate about what we do for a living as comics is we can say whatever we want. And it's as long as it's couched in funny, it's fine. Nobody really necessarily calls us on it, you know. But that's changing. Alec Baldwin called somebody a cocksucker, I guess.
Right, right.
And got a whole bunch of flack for being anti-gay. For which is
well,
really
gay
weird.
Gay men aren't the only ones that suck cock.
Exactly, Kira Sultana.
Straight men do it too.
Say that. Oh, wait a minute. That was in college and I was drunk, sort of.
Mm. That was a focus group?
Yeah, and the guy was super dark, and that is my weakness. I mean, night dark.
Wow.
He was from the Sudan.
He was wearing his Sudanese nose.
He was wearing his Sudanese nose
his
and hands.
Sudanose.
His Sudanose. Have you ever met anybody from the Sudan? They're giants. Striking people.
Really? Oh. I probably have. I mean, I'm from San Francisco. We have a little bit of everything.
I was just up there.
Yeah? Doing a gig?
You are not San Francisco at all. You're New York.
I know.
San Francisco has low blood sugar. That whole town needs some naps and some vitamins. They're so sensible. You get up on stage and they clap and they're just, it's... I like Miami. I like places like that more. They're just more alive.
Let me tell you, the city has changed so much. The people that live in San Francisco now are not the San Francisco people I grew up with.
Really?
The city has changed ever since the dot-com boom and Silicon
yeah.
Valley and all that. It's all these...
Money, huh?
It's just like nerds.
Yeah.
Nerds with money.
And who like food.
Food, which is great because they have great restaurants,
yeah.
but it's not the kind of people that I grew up with.
Right.
It's very, very different. San Francisco is a very East Coast city, or at least it used
I
to be.
I think so, yeah.
You know, before all the yoga lattes moved in. There's a lot of yoga lattes.
What is the latte?
Yoga Pilates.
Oh, yoga lattes.
Yeah. Now it's all, it's very gentrified now, and it's all.
New York City's that way.
Yeah, Manhattan, exactly. Yeah.
Manhattan's beyond. Manhattan is, you got to have so much money to live in that city. And I'm talking about everywhere. Anybody who is of middle class, lower class, God help you, or even like, I mean, you got to make crazy money. I
did
mean,
you,
they're
did
pushed
you hear
out.
Spike Lee's rant
yes.
on Brooklyn?
Yes.
That was genius and had to
it's
be
where
said.
Where he came from, man.
Yeah. He was
you
like,
know?
White people, don't try to come in here and change what we've been doing for decades.
Yeah.
And we're playing our music too loud. Get your
yeah.
Pete's coffee and get out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that. And it's so true.
I think,
he's right.
Yeah, because I think what he's addressing, whether he was eloquent about it or not, is, you know, those communities came up like organically.
Right.
They got generations behind them. And when you're in a community like those areas of Brooklyn, what happens is you can't help but to be in each other's faces. You got to not. You if you start losing your mind over somebody's playing a music too loud. And if you start getting crazy about your personal space,
mm-hmm.
it's not something that socioeconomic class was even able to afford.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it is part of the flavor of a city like that when you all come up together and, you know, look at the subways, man. When you're on the subways, you're literally breathing in somebody else's essence. I mean, they're like right on, they're touching you. That is New York. And
right.
So I sympathize with Spike's rant in that sense because, you know, it is an exclusionary, it really is, people really are moved out of those communities.
Yeah.
And they've been there forever. And where do they go? They keep moving farther and farther out. It is the nature of whatever is going on in this economy.
Yeah, well, that's what happened in San Francisco. All the teachers, at the first dot-com boom, yeah. All the teachers, the janitors, the bus drivers, everybody had to leave.
It's happening in Venice.
In Venice, Italy.
California. Okay. And in Venice, Italy.
In Venice. All the Italians, they got to go to Austria.
They have to go to Austria.
They are now in Vienna because they cannot afford.
And the Austrians don't like
Look,
Italians.
If you don't know how to swim, you're not going to survive in Venice pretty soon because it is sinking more and more.
That's true, actually.
But in Venice Venice, California.
Google moved in.
To Venice.
You can't look at a place. You cannot look. They were selling for $1.7 million near Abbot Kinney, they were selling a 1,200 or 1,300 square foot little cottage.
What?
Oh, you're not.
Why is it that important to live in Abbot Kinney?
Because it's becoming, it's got those great coffee shops and those great restaurants, and it's just like a great street in San Francisco. And it's an interesting thing that's happening. I mean, I don't know if you do the road a lot, but
yeah.
I tend to do the road a lot. And it's happening in a lot of cities, you know, but I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Usually you'd say, well, if the economy is getting better and people can afford $5 cups of coffee.
Right.
But really what's kind of happening is the people that are you know, already have a leg up and are kind of in a position to take advantage of good schooling and good example. And, you know, if you have extra income, you can take soccer and violin and karate and all the things that help you develop as a person and all that. When you don't have that much money, you're relying on the public school system in a lot of counties and a lot of cities where you get your reading, writing, and arithmetic and go home. Man, it sucks. So there is this kind of...
No one's there when you get home because your parents have three jobs, but go home.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm not an economist, but I wonder if there is a growing rift between sort of the very rich or the people that are in those cities that we're talking about and everybody else. I think there is.
Well, here's what was happening in San Francisco. The teachers were moving out, right? So they lived three blocks from the school where they were teaching before. Now they live an hour and a half commute.
That's so fucking crazy.
They have to get up at 6.
Yeah.
So now you have a tired teacher. I don't know about you, but I'd be pissed off.
I can't do it.
Right? So now you have a tired-ass teacher coming in all the way across the bridge to their school teaching, and now they have a two-hour commute back.
Yeah, that's sad.
And then they still have to grade homework and do the papers and all the stuff. So
that's not right.
That kind of thing, you know, that I think affects our students on another level.
Yeah.
I grew up in public schools. I don't know about you. I grew up
I grew up actually
college.
All over the world, so I would go to whatever school was available. That's
what do you mean all over the world?
Philippines, India, Pakistan, Greece, Saudi Arabia. I was bouncing around.
All right, settle down.
14.
Relax.
I know. It's where I get the edge.
From Pakistan, for sure.
But wait, Kira, I want to say this to people because I was talking to some comics I very much respect who know the difference, and they said... I said, what do you think of Kira Sultanovich's comedy? They go, she's hilarious. That's a real comic. And then the girl said, that's the kind of comic I want to be. So,
And that girl was Joan Rivers.
And that girl.
That is so sweet.
That girl was Michelle Obama. And I said, Michelle, stick to being first
lady.
Yeah,
really, Michelle. Keep your day
job. Because
you're
boring me with your vegetarian point of view. No,
That's very kind of them. You won't tell me who it is.
Well, but you went to public schools.
Right.
And you came up rich or you came up middle class or what?
I came up Soviet, which means...
Are you Russian?
Yeah. I was born...
Sultanovich.
Yeah. I was born in the Ukraine.
A Russian Jew.
Yeah.
Oh, the Russian Jews. The Jews in Russia did not have a good time of it.
They didn't have... It wasn't a party every
day.
The word
pogrom is a Jewish... I think it's a Yiddish name
yeah.
for... what would happen to the Jews until it got so bad that they most of them had to emigrate. Of course, there's World War II, which was the worst, you know, the culmination. But even before that, they would live in these things called the Pales, right, the ghettos. And they were just routinely brutalized because the Tsar would be like, well, the economy's doing shitty. Let's blame the Jews. And people would march into your village and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know
this. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is not a prosthetic. You know what I mean? This nose is a Soviet nose.
You're a good-looking woman. Don't kid yourself.
I have to just, you know, fix my ponytail a little bit. That was from a bit we did before we started rolling. You know, but I grew up in the public schools. That was the question, right?
Yeah, I want to know about you.
Yeah, all public schools.
In other words, you're a comic. What makes you? What do you think you're a comic and as good as you are?
Oh, I was hit severely. And that's all you need to know,
and just,
really.
Just quiet. And that's the end of the podcast. I was hit severely.
Right. Or what if it was just silent and I'm just sitting here crying and you go to the sponsor?
But we just hear tears hitting a wood plank.
Well, we're sponsored by Squarespace today.
But we got a crying Soviet.
That little... weren't you hit at all?
Yes, I was hit.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My mother would
tell.
Take a riding crop or a wooden spoon to my legs or my ass.
A riding crop?
Oh, yeah. She used to ride horses. And I was a pain in the ass. And you want to say? I want to say something. I deserve to be hit. Looking back on it, I was a little shithead.
Okay.
And I'm not emotionally scarred from it either.
Okay. Well, I don't think I deserve to be hit in as many public places as it took place.
Is that right? Did you get hit a lot?
Oh my God!
So you're not kidding about this?
No, of course not. No, why would I even kid? Isn't this the Brian Callen Truth Hour?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Oh no, I was smacked. And I was much taller than my mom by the time I got into junior high, like seventh grade.
Yeah.
Because she's an itty-bitty little, you know, she's just a little mini Jew. You know what I mean? She's tiny. And she would jump. I mean, she didn't care. She would like Air Jordans in the 80s or whatever, like the Reeboks, whatever they were. And she'd jump to smack me.
Wow.
That's the Soviet way. You know, that's just the Russian way. Not every...
Do you speak Russian?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But there's a difference between being Russian and being Russian Jewish, isn't there?
Well, yes.
What is it?
Well, there's also a difference between being a Soviet Jew from when we immigrated in the late 70s to a Soviet Jew now. Mm. That is hugely
what is
different.
The difference?
When my parents immigrated, they went to night school to learn the language. They worked two jobs. You know, they were struggling and they really came with nothing. Mm. We were actually considered refugees.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
That's true in the 70s. Of course you were. You probably weren't even allowed out of the country, but...
No, there was one train that left the Ukraine. And when it left, it went towards Austria.
So your family was in the Ukraine?
Yeah, that's where I was born,
Jesus.
And so when it left, everybody around the little village would come to the train station knowing that that one train that left was taking people out. Like, you weren't coming back. Not like in an Auschwitz type of way, but you know what I mean? Like in an immigration way. And it was so frowned upon. How could you leave Mother Russia?
Yeah.
There's nothing for you. That's what they would tell Jews, by the way, that there's nothing for Jews anywhere else in the world.
I bet.
That you'd be treated way worse than we treat you here. So we got in this train and people are throwing garbage at us. And my mom's holding me and I'm really little and my older brother. And my dad had gone ahead to find housing. So it was just my mom and us, and my uncle took us to the train station and they're throwing garbage and they're throwing crap and just like screaming and yelling and cursing at us. And we get on the train and my mom's just covered in filth, right? And I was really little and I started to poop.
Yeah.
And we didn't have like diapers really. It was just like a cloth, whatever, like with literally like a safety pin, like in the cartoons. And my mom held her hand out and I pooped in her hand. And she opened the window and she threw it out the window at all the people throwing garbage.
Kira shit. Kira poo.
And so that's how we left. That's how we left Russia.
And that's how you started an epidemic that killed the entire village. Hepatitis. Hepatitis X. Which is hepatitis with some hate added.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's an amazing, you know, if you ever, there's a book called Exodus. I don't know if you ever read it by Leon Uris.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
The founding of the State of Israel. But it starts, they touch a great deal on the Russian Jews who came to Israel and what it was to be a Russian Jew. I mean, if you came from the Ukraine and you were Jewish, your grandparents then must have lived and somehow got away with the living in the Ukraine when the Nazis came through and killed everyone. I mean, Amos Oz, who's a great, great author, Israeli author, his mother, in one day, his mother left to ask, why did your mother commit suicide? He said, my mother, in one day in the Ukraine in her village, the Soviets killed 25,000 people. In one day, they lined them up and shot them into mass graves. 25,000 people. That's more people than have been killed in 1,000 years of Jewish-Arab conflict. And that's what the Nazis did to that countryside. There's another book called The Painted Bird about that. You better have a strong stomach to read it. But what the Nazis did when they came through Russia, and that's why Russia, when the tides turned, the Russians settled scores in a big way with the soldiers, the German soldiers they caught. But the people that bore the brunt wasn't just the Russian serf. It was because Hitler had literally a policy of clearing that area, the Russian countryside, which is a huge area. It's an area bigger than the Midwest of the United States. We're going to clear it for Germans, and we're going to kill everybody who's in the way. And that's where that systematic slaughter happened. And if you are Jewish, good luck. Forget it.
Well, my grandparents, my mom's parents, she had an older brother, and my mom was born in 42. And which, if she's listening, I'm so sorry. I told people, but she was born in Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah, I know Kyrgyzstan.
Right.
Yeah.
So she was born there because they fled. They fled the Ukraine, and she was born in a basement where they kept like all these Jews. And my grandfather was a soldier, so he had gone to the front lines, and his higher ups, whoever was his boss, said, hey, I hope you guys don't have any kids because you might not come back. So my grandmother didn't tell him that she was pregnant.
Wow.
Right? So she didn't tell him. My mom is inside my grandmother's belly there in Kyrgyzstan. So she's born. My grandfather comes back, and they're all in this basement. All these families are living together. And this baby is crying nonstop. And my grandfather's like, shut that baby, right? And my grandmother says, that's your baby.
Holy shit.
That was my mom.
Amazing.
And she was told, like, shh, quiet, for so long when she was also growing up, because then they finally moved and went back to the Ukraine, that she developed a stutter.
Wow.
So because she was shush from the first day
the
she was born.
Yeah.
You know, like our kids now, like you have kids, I have a 3-year-old, all they're taught is like sing and dance and you know what I mean? At home, it's like screaming, but imagine from the day you're born.
Because you would be killed.
Shush. Yes.
You might be killed.
So
you might be found and killed.
Yeah, has had a stutter almost her entire life. It's not anything severe, like you wouldn't know it really.
That's incredible though.
But it's so, gosh, she's like in her 70s and it's like, you're still not over it, obviously. Even though it's buried, it's buried.
Do you identify yourself as a Jew, as somebody who is a survivor, or somebody who reads the Torah? I mean, you're a comic, so you probably are all over the fucking map, right?
Yes. So my brother died 10 years ago, coming up on 11, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he at 38.
How did he die?
Fell over, heart attack. At 38, he was not overweight. Everyone always asks, "Was he overweight?"
You can have a compromise in your aorta or something, and you die.
So after that moment, both my parents became very religious. Like my mom started going to temple. Before that, zero. The only time we lit candles was when the power went out. You know what I mean? Like we were not Jewish. And then my dad became a Zionist. Which is a whole nother level.
And for
level.
You guys who are listening, a Zionist is somebody who basically wants to that Israel is the chosen land that should be settled, right? I mean, that's what a Zionist, that's how you define one.
Right. It's not just, you're not just a Jew now. Now no. you're like,
now
you're like,
now you're actively securing your homeland, which is the biblical land of Israel.
I call it the Black Panthers of Judaism. It's
exactly.
All about, like...
They're hardcore.
Yeah, they have the green,
And by the way, most Israelis are not Zionists. I mean, a lot of Israelis that you talk to are like, listen, you know, it's hard for us. Of course, the Palestinians need a life and we need one too. But I don't know why they sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger. But, you know, it's a difficult position for all of us.
But we dance and we drink. Have hummus.
If you come to Kiev, you're going to see it. I mean, if you come to Tel Aviv, it's like New York. I mean, it's unbelievable.
They always say that.
I love it.
Always.
I love it.
But he went to Israel and started volunteering for the Israeli army and washing tanks and folding the soldiers' laundry and packing their lunch. I mean, it was transformational, both my parents. And they're divorced. So they did it on their own, separately. You know what I'm saying?
Amazing.
Yeah, they've been divorced for 20 years. So they became that. I didn't really...
Kind of they reinvented themselves after that terrible tragedy, I guess.
Yeah. I think they just needed something to hold on to.
So one became really religious, the other became a Zionist.
Yeah, and I booked more TV spots. So that's how we all deal with
I just booked death. More TV shit. I just decided to make more money.
You know, Jews scare me, I'll be honest. They really do.
Yeah.
The ultra-Orthodox ones.
Sure.
They just
anybody who's a fundamentalist.
Right.
You know, I would argue that the strength of Judaism is probably in its constant requirement to question even itself. I mean, you know, most the nature of the Jewish character is debate. Is to not accept anything as
That's
orthodoxy.
True. Anything and they go to school
truth.
To learn how to debate. That's
of
what yeshiva
course.
Is.
You're always questioning. Even Moses argued with God, for God's sake. Even God called the Israelites the stiff-necked people because they just were not willing to settle for, you know, living in a sun-baked, scorched world. They wanted more. That is part of as is the idea that as an individual, you can change the world. There's a linear progression to time. And so as a Jew, it's your responsibility in your own way to
right.
kind of come up with a better way to do things. You usually had to anywhere. You'd be kicked out or killed because usually you're in a minority in your society. So.
But you were asking earlier about how they're different now. Mm. They're so different. The immigrants that come now, whether it's L.A. or New York or San Francisco or wherever they're moving to, they are like sponsored by designers. Like they come wearing Armani and Versace. They have it on their back like it's NASCAR.
And they have money. There.
And they have so much money. I drive B and W. I drive both of them. And they want Mercedes. And it's so different. And it's a little bit gross
and
to
aggressive,
me.
Aggressive, right?
It's very aggressive.
Yeah.
They don't want to learn English.
Yeah.
They don't really need money because they have import export at home. It's okay. Like they've made like business choices in both Russia and America.
Yeah.
And it's just weird to me. It's so different and weird and literally foreign.
Right. Well, it is foreign for you.
Yeah.
You grew up in San Francisco.
Yeah, we grew up in San Francisco where all the immigrants were very, you know, my parents' friends could discipline me, could smack me around, could feed me, could tell me to go take a nap. Could put like
it was a communal thing.
Very much so. Yeah.
When did you decide to be a comic?
First grade.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I don't know, something kicked in me.
Yeah.
And speaking of, it's so funny because I'm not a Jew, but it was at Hebrew Academy, which I got kicked out of shortly after first grade.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
Good sign for a comic.
Second grade, I was already in public school, but Hebrew Academy, I had a desk in the hallway because I was in the hallway more than I was inside the classroom.
Mm.
And, you know, did you ever go to... Like a religious school?
No.
No. So we're praying.
I'd catch fire, ladies and gentlemen. You know what I mean? Because I'm a bad boy. Keep going, Kira.
So we had to pray. And I remember praying and then acting out what we were praying about. Like when the teachers had, you know,
oh, wow.
the rabbi had his
oh,
back
that's
to me.
Interesting.
So if we were praying about like the sun, I would, you know, I would like reach up to the skies and be like, ah, the sun is hot and it would touch your heart or whatever we were singing about or praying about or like water, you know, and we were talking about water. So I would like, the mining the bucket of water out of a boat or whatever. And I'm six.
Yeah.
Now you have a 6-year-old. Imagine your 6-year-old being told to sit out in the hallway.
I used to have to sit out in the hallway.
You were in the hallway too.
I couldn't figure out how to. It was like the first time I worked at a bank out of college. I talked my way into a banking job. And I remember, you know, I knew people who made a lot of money. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this because what you're asking me to do is make the shareholders richer for this bank and myself richer for this bank, you know, for myself. But I couldn't understand the idea that my life was going to be a number at the end of it.
Right, right.
Like, I was going to have a cool house, I guess, in the Hamptons, and I'd have, you know, lots of money, and I'd have a... But I just... It really made me panic. It was the one thing I was terrified of, the idea that I was going to, you know, have... I was going to be a civilian.
Right.
And I always felt that way in school. Like, I would be sitting there studying, and I just somehow... couldn't follow. I couldn't. I just always felt like I was on the outside looking in. To my credit and to my detriment. I'm not saying, you know, you should be that way. It's a hard way to come up some ways. Thank God I was able to do stand-up. But a lot of times, if I didn't do stand-up, I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
I would have been, I'd be broke for sure, you know.
Well, now those kids are medicated.
Yeah, now they are. And like I was never medicated.
I was maybe medicated
by Snickers. I had to stand in class. Yeah, I had to stand in class. I had such ADD.
You know, like recently or in the last whatever, I don't know if it's already not as popular anymore, but like those flash mob things.
Yeah.
Remember those that were big and now they've kind of died down? I wanted to do a flash mob. This is back years ago, right? Mm. I'm in high school. And I tried to convince our entire history class, my senior year of high school, that we need to just spontaneously start singing. You know what I mean? Like everyone just like you in this corner, you start off and it was Mr. Sandman, right? Bum 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 bum. And then the other side of the classroom. And then you guys go. And I orchestrated this whole thing because I couldn't stand the fact that the days would just be normal.
Yeah.
Like that didn't make any sense to me. Like nothing awesome is going to happen today.
Well, because when you live in that kind of a thing, actually what you're forfeiting is your own autonomy. In a way, you're being forced to homogenize yourself with everybody around you. That is what it is. When you have to be somewhat conformist, because it just, and I sympathize with anybody trying to do that. If you're trying to teach a class, you do need some conformity. But
absolutely,
I just couldn't. I just didn't feel like the other people.
No, I didn't. And I saw Mr. Hafey, my history teacher in San Francisco, when I was visiting home a few years back, and I apologized to him. And he's like, it's fine. But I know at the time he wanted to murder me.
But do you think that what was the overriding emotion, do you think, that you felt as a kid? Because mine was shame.
Okay, what do you mean that propelled you to make?
I just when I think back on my childhood, the overriding, I suppose, the primary emotion that was driving me, or was just present all the time, was a sense of shame.
What do you mean? I don't know what that means. What were you ashamed of?
I don't know. I was ashamed of the way I was built. I was skinny. I was ashamed of the way I thought. I was ashamed of how sensitive I felt. I was ashamed of all those things. I didn't feel.
And you think
like
that propelled you into comedy?
I don't know. I'm not
interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to people. I wanted people to smile.
Yeah, you sound like yours was joy.
Mine was like I didn't want to do it in a jackass, that typical class clown way.
Mm-hmm.
I would go. I would cut class. This is so silly. I would cut class, right? And you know, all the hallways, all the doors are open to the classrooms. They didn't really close the doors a lot.
Right.
And so I'd walk by and I would see students just like sitting there with their hands, you know, covering their faces, and they just
drudgery.
Look so glum. Yeah, and they just look so like just pissed and bored and whatever. And I took like a big piece of butcher paper and I drew this like ridiculous kind of Cheshire cat smile on it, and then I wrote smile on top, and I folded it up. So I was like walking down the hallway and no one knew what it said, and then I'd go to the doors that were open almost like a flasher, like showing my taint to this classroom, like take a look at this, yeah,
smile.
You like that?
Yeah.
And it just said smile, and then their faces would change and their bodies would change and they would be like, Kira's such a nut. Yeah. I love that. And then the teacher would see like, you know, what's going on in the classroom, and then the fun was running.
I got
a high off of like, let's go to the next floor. And I had to go to the third floor. And I knew I had a friend in, like, the math class.
My paper said, fuck you. That's what guys do. Smile. I just want to say something. Like, just draw a big dick. hey, I drew a dick and showed it to the class.
Some people would smile.
Who are your favorite female comics?
Paula Poundstone's my favorite.
She's good, huh?
Paula Poundstone is a killer.
Did she ever sort of...
touch me inappropriately?
Yeah, I was going to say, did she ever rebound from that weird situation? What was that?
I think she did. I don't know. You know,
I mean, I don't even, you know, when I hear like a woman touched a a young man or something inappropriate, or a young girl?
I think it was a girl.
But how old was she? Like 18?
Yeah, her daughter. I mean, she was in her 20s. Her daughter was like 15 or something like that. I approached her to do, not that I'm trying to plug.
So a 15-year-old, I mean, if it's a guy, I got a problem. It's funny how, what a chauvinist I'm like, Paul Poundstone made out with a 15-year-old girl who was probably into her. They're making out with each other anyway. I don't know.
Look, did it happen? I don't know, yeah, right? Yeah. But it was dismissed in court, right? Mm. And
it was?
Yeah, okay. I think they settled out. Like, they were like, all both parties were like, oh, okay, whatever, this is kind of stupid. But look, when you're 15, remember, I mean, look, you felt shame. Remember your body at 15.
I was so horny all the time. I would have killed to have had sexual relations with an older woman.
But with your mom?
Well, whatever. It wasn't my mom. It was just an older woman who was all curvy.
But this was her mom. So imagine, like, someone says something about your breasts, and you're like, I'm 15. I don't know what anything means. My hormones are surging through. So then all of a sudden you're like, my mom wanted to touch my breasts. Like, you don't know. Like, maybe I'm not trying to be on Paula's side, but I'm saying, like, I could see that happening when you're 15. And a little bit confused by what you're feeling in your nipples.
Listen, my voice gets real low now.
Say it slower.
No, I understand.
I wanted to say, I don't want to promote my podcast, but yes, I do. But I have a podcast about comics, and we talk about our kids, right?
Yeah.
So I approached Paula to be
on my
podcast.
Your podcast is comics and
comics
kids.
And kids. So I have to have you on. And all we do is just talk about what comedy and kids, that's it, and like how they come together, and what's it all, how has it changed, and what does it mean, and are we better parents or worse parents or what. And I approached her to be on my podcast because she's awesome, and she has, you know, she adopted kids, which is great. And then I realized, oh, she probably doesn't want me to sandbag her. Maybe she's thinking,
yeah,
like, why would I go on your pod, you know that I have a history,
yeah,
fuck you, you know what I mean, like that. And so I realized, she probably won't get back to me on that.
Yeah.
But if you're listening, Paula, I promise I won't bring it up.
But you love her.
Like, I brought it up now. I loved her. I saw her special. She did crowd work in her special. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I want some of that.
Yeah. Who else?
Females. Just females. I was always a Wendy Liebman fan.
Yeah.
Always. That's when I was
great.
Like coming up. Now, you know, my contemporaries, like Maria Bamford, is just ridiculous.
I love her.
She, talk about on another level.
I know.
Her brain, I don't even know. Like, someone needs to.
Did you see her special?
Yeah. Genius.
For any of you guys, Maria Bamford did a special for her parents.
In their living room. It's just them.
The greatest.
It's just them. But she played it like it was an audience of thousands.
My father's,
you know what I mean?
Got a bag.
She's incredible. She's great.
I love her.
But what changed it all for me was Eddie Murphy. Mm. I snuck into Raw.
I saw Raw too.
Yeah.
In concert.
Yeah. Oh, in concert?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I saw the movie when it was.
No, I went and saw his.
Wow.
I saw him live twice when I was a kid.
What?
Yeah.
We got tickets for like a Disney movie and then snuck in to Raw because I wasn't obviously
Raw
old
was
enough.
Something else.
That changed everything for me.
Yeah.
It changed everything. Eddie, everything.
He was a great stand up comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what the stuff he did, I mean, that guy is so prodigiously talented, but I think just.
I'm going to look up that word.
Wealth, I have very big vocabulary. Wealth and probably weed, and then his fear of being outed, I think, you know, for whatever his sexuality. I know he likes men to dress up as women, I guess, or he's been caught doing it. I don't know.
Cool.
But I think that those things kind of somehow dulled his edge, maybe.
I don't know. Well, he had kids, and that changed.
Yeah.
I don't think you can, like, really strut around in a red leather suit.
Well, he's so wealthy, too. It's hard to be. I wonder if I had.
Where's that hunger?
I mean, if I had a shitload of money, if you gave me, like, you know, what? I don't know. Let's call it 100 mil. I don't know that I'd be on the road as much as I am.
Is that donkey money?
It's donkey money. Yes, he made $1 billion for them.
That's what we're going to call lots of money
it's
from now on.
It's not just donkey
it's
money.
Donkey
he does.
Money.
He's got a lot of other, you know, he's been working
of
forever.
Of course he has.
He lives
like
a sultan. You know,
wow.
It's got one of the biggest houses in Southern California.
Jeez.
It's like a shake. But the question is, what do you think, how do you think it would change you if I gave you $50 million? 50. And let me tell you what the interest on that is.
Okay.
The interest on $50 million, I'm talking about
is
very
conservative. Your banker days? You're going back to your banker times?
Yeah, I'm going to be very conservative. $50 million, the interest on that is probably, let's call it, I mean, I'm being very conservative, $7 million.
Okay.
$6 million. I might be wrong about that. Okay. Somebody
let's,
help me with
let's
that.
Let's look it up. Can we call my Wells Fargo guy right now? Yeah. What would I do with it, or how would I act?
So
would
in other words, you have more than you can spend, pretty much.
Right, right. You know, I don't know. That's such a good question. Of course, you daydream about it all the time and think about it. I would hope deep down in my guts that it wouldn't change me, that it wouldn't, that I would still... would I do the Comedy Store on a potluck Sunday and wait 3 hours for a spot? No.
Right.
No, of course not. But I wouldn't have to. That's how it would change you a lot, you know, where, but I would never, see, here's the thing with some comics, and you're not going to name your comics, so I'm not going to name mine. You probably know who it is anyway. But there's certain huge, huge comics that now that they have made, maybe not 50, but hey, even 10 is pretty awesome.
Right.
They've made like 10, 20 million. They will walk into a comedy club and just shit all over the comics who are, you know, making after minimum. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
and they'll say, well, I can just walk in and do whatever I want. And who cares?
Right.
I hope I don't do that. That's what I really hope I don't do. If I want to come and do a spot, hey, I'll go last if I'm going to do an hour.
Well, I think sometimes, though, the club wants you to come in. And it's good for the club. So at 7% of 50 million is $3.5 million.
Right. Okay.
So that's a very conservative, you know, portfolio. Anyway, I think that for the most part, though, you wouldn't bump people. In other words.
Or if I did, I would walk up to them and make eye contact like they're humans. Yeah. You know, like we're all doing this together. Yes, you're at a different level and different tax bracket than me. I totally get it.
Yeah.
But I also have a life and a kid and I'm lactating and I got to go home and breastfeed. And you doing an hour before my 15-minute spot, really. And if you're just a human about it, like, hey, sorry I had to do that. I'm not even saying have a lengthy conversation, just like, hey, thanks, sorry, whatever.
I
like
agree.
Something that just makes you human. Then
I have a problem. Dave Chappelle will get up on stage and be there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And not doing funny stuff. And there's this weird cult of admiration. This, like, you know, Dave Chappelle apparently is God. I didn't know that.
Right.
But I guess he's God.
Right.
I've seen a lot of his stand-up. He's, you know, he's really good. I mean,
yeah,
he's funny. He's got good stuff, but he's not God. And he's not that funny when he does 3 hours. In fact, he kind of sucks. And
who's going to be good for 3 hours?
Who's going to be good? And also, you know, you're going to get him to do an hour, you know, but the guy's up there for 3 hours. I can understand if you're Dave Chappelle and you want, but he gets up there and just starts talking. And it's just the height of arrogance and weirdness. I don't know the guy. And I know people like, you know, you need the good. I don't care. I'm too old to give a fuck about that guy. And I'm too old to give a fuck about even his comedy. I don't care. There's nobody in the world that's going to impress me if they're comics. I respect, you know, Louis C.K. and Doug Stanhope and Joe Rogan, who's my buddy, and lots of my friends who are great. But I'm not in awe of you. I'll tell you that much. I don't give a fuck who you are. And if you're going to take up 3 hours of my time, if it's my time and you're doing it, I'm going to say something to you. I got a problem with you. You know, because where I come from, you can get smacked in the fucking head for that, you know? I don't understand.
Yeah, Pakistan.
Pakistan. Where I'm from in Pakistan. I just don't understand that kind of stuff. So,
tell the comics, hey, Dave's here. Look, he's going to do 3 hours. I get it if you need to leave. Or, you know what I mean? Like, at least, I just feel like the communication. I'm all about communication.
I don't get it.
And
I'm not. I'm not about somebody doing 3 hours.
I'm
not at all. I don't get it. Unless you're painfully funny.
Right.
But who's doing that for 3 hours?
But if you went up first? What if he did 3 hours at the end of a night? Then it doesn't matter, right? Then it doesn't affect you. You can go home.
That's
you're
fine.
Done.
But when you literally bump 20 people at the Comedy Store, if you're going to do that, I would imagine you should probably be pretty funny. Under no circumstances
I
think that's okay.
When I make 50 million,
you're not going to do 3 hours.
I promise I won't do it to you.
All right, Kira.
All right?
I'd have to pinky swear. I would have to fight with you. I'd have to fight you.
Look, I've seen your horse stance.
You've seen my power.
I
But you're Russian.
I have anal leakage every time
that's
you
what
do
I like
that.
To hear. That's what
God.
I like to hear.
Do you do power yoga? Do you
I've
do
done
hot,
it. I've done
hot yoga?
It. I've done it. I've done it. It's why my chakras and my hamstrings are so loose. My chakras are so aligned and my hammies are so
You're not shameful of your body now, though, because it's...
I won Best Body in Comedy from from the International Comedy Federation, and they know. I mean, they are the authority. It's
Can
embarrassing.
You imagine? We should have that. We should
like
have that, like, best smile, like a yearbook.
Almost Famous. Brian Callen wins Almost Famous third year in a row.
Famous adjacent.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Who else do you admire?
Like right now, like who I watch and
yeah.
You know, I'm kind of like old school. Like I still love Chris Rock.
Yeah.
I still love like when he is practicing for an awards show or whatever, like yeah. I love seeing him live. He'll come and pop into a club and I think he's, yeah, I love the way he does. I like the way he works. Like he says a bit in just a normal, chill, relaxed way. And then the more he builds it, if it works with him just yeah. speaking normally.
He tends to write on stage in a way.
Right. And yeah. then he builds it. And then he puts his, you know, flavor, yeah. his twist
See,
and his voice.
I got Kevin Hart over Chris Rock. I think Kevin Hart's just
Kevin Hart
me.
Is
He did a
great.
Set the other day with just a bunch of new stuff. I was dying.
Yeah. Kevin Hart, I like animated comics. And don't get me wrong, like I like someone
me
like
too.
Morgan Murphy too. Do you know Morgan?
I love Morgan.
Very chill, smart.
Yeah.
I like her style also. I'm, you know, I.
She's got a really funny joke where Morgan says about that thing, how to lose a guy in 30 days or whatever. And Drew Barrymore keeps trying to lose the guy. She doesn't know how because he just keeps loving her. And Morgan was like, she was like, I was watching the movie and I was like, if you want to lose him, just shit on the floor. Just shit on the floor. What's the problem?
Is it Morgan's bit that she talks about being hit by a trophy when she was a kid?
I think so.
And her mom's like, you're nothing. She's like, but the trophy says I'm number one.
I think so.
I love
she
that.
She reminds me, she and Neil Brennan, I feel,
yeah.
are the same person.
Neil
and they just
Brennan
exchange
is,
wigs. Like, you know. I mean,
he's funny.
Yeah,
everything he's, like, I always see him do new stuff at the factory especially.
Yeah.
And it's always good. I'm like, how is it hitting this hard? I know that's new.
Yeah, Neil
like
writes a lot.
He must craft it really tightly before he gets on stage.
Neil's a disciplined guy.
But I write on stage too, so when I do a new bit, it's like a you know a giraffe just being born. You know what I mean? It's like covered in goo and it's just barely walking and just looking for a nipple.
That's a great.
But have you ever seen a giraffe being born?
Yes, I love that metaphor.
It hits its head on the ground because
that's
how it neurologically wakes up.
It flops on the right.
Yeah.
God damn.
That's what I feel like on stage sometimes. But he always just seems very crafted.
Yeah.
Like he has thought it through, which drives me crazy.
Well, everybody has their own process, man. I had a really interesting experience. I was in San Francisco this last weekend. And you know, my 1 hour is hitting pretty hard and it's doing well and blah, blah, blah. But I realized I'm going to lose 30 minutes of it because it's not in step or thematic enough with the latter part of my stand-up, which is more honest. And the first part's tricks, and the latter part's more honest. So
wait a second. So you did it all in one night?
Well, I mean, I've been doing this. I've been working out this 1 hour to shoot my next special.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And I realize I'm going to lose about 40% of it. You know?
So what are you going to do?
I'm going to bring in more of my mother and more of my kids. And you know, it's just more thematic. I realized that I was taking there were tricks and shortcuts and I didn't
yeah.
even realize it. I guess that's what I'm saying.
We all have our little bag of tricks.
Well, look, man, stand up, you know, formulating a good 1 hour or whatever it is, it takes a long time to percolate. And
didn't you just shoot something?
Yeah, but a while ago.
Oh my gosh, so this is all new?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm at that process right now. I'm literally at first day of all new material.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary.
I think it's a good place to be, though.
Really?
Yeah, because I think the way to do it is, for me, is just I ask. I don't even try to be funny. I just start asking important questions. What am I afraid of? What am I ashamed of? Who do I want to be? Who am I pretending to be? You know, that kind
wow.
of stuff. How'd I get here?
Can I take a class with you?
I teach a workshop.
Mechanics? Yeah.
We do a lot of hands-on work. I work on relaxation of the upper body.
Where is my comedy chakra?
Well, you're holding in your hips, so if you could just let me manipulate
Hell
that
yeah.
area.
That's
yeah.
very true.
We'll get down. We'll get naked. I got a sex swing. I mean, a swing, not a sex swing, a swing.
I got a lot of punchlines in my hips.
We'll commit adultery. Adultery. The first class is called adultery, everybody.
That word is so doesn't that word does not fit what adultery is.
Yeah.
Adultery just sounds like a harness that an adult would wear. Like, you know what I mean? Like
Well, infidelity is that. Yeah.
Infidelity? That's infidel. That does sound more aggressive. But adultery just sounds like, oh, you're wearing your adultery. Yeah, it's just a harness I wear to feel safe.
Well, my buddy got caught cheating on his wife, like, and she found out he had been doing it, like, he was a serial cheater.
Right.
And they had this just blowout fight, of course. And she's like, "Ah, you did this and this." And he goes, "All right, you got me. Yes, I committed gross infidelity." Gross infidelity. As in, like, you know, he goes, "But that doesn't give you a right." And that's how he started his platform. I was like, dude, when you start your argument like that, you're dead in the water to begin with.
So he was an aggressive adulterer.
Yeah.
Wow.
He had some problems. I actually stopped being friends with him.
Really?
Yeah, because he, not because of that even, but he called me and he asked me if I knew any doctors to get him antibiotics because mm-hmm. he had a little bit of a drip going on down there.
Nice.
And yeah. I said, yeah. I said, but make sure you call the girls you were with because that can make them sterile if they have gonorrhea or chlamydia. And he said, nah, man, I'm not doing that. And I went, what do you mean? And he goes, I'm not calling the girls. I don't know who I did it, got it from, and that's embarrassing. And I went, I know, dude, but they can go barren. They can get sterile. So your behavior now is hurting somebody else. If you want to fuck around, that's fine. But you know, if you get caught, you gotta face the music. You gotta make sure that those women are not going to be unhealthy or lose the chance of having kids. And he just didn't register with him. I was like, oh, that's the click for me, man. I call that the click.
Tell him to call me immediately
right. And
let me know what it is.
Oh, no, sweetie.
Tell him.
Take the pills, bitch. Take the pills. But I remember that. I was like, oh, you're that guy. It was like my friend one time. I was on a train, and we were going from New York to D.C., which is like 3 hours or longer. And there was an ancient man. Amtrak had overbooked it. This ancient man was standing right next to me. And I saw him punch his ticket. He had to go to Baltimore, which is what, 2 hours or something?
Mm-hmm.
Or more. And I was I was there. And so I got up and gave him my seat, of course.
Right.
And he was a macho dude. He goes, nah, I'm all right. I go, no, dude, I actually want to stand because my legs hurt. You know, he's 90.
Yeah.
Give him your fucking seat. I was 20-something.
Right.
That's not being heroic or noble. It's called being a human being, right? Nobody gives me an award for that. If you don't do that, you're a dick. And my buddy got mad at me because he had to sit next to a smelly old man. And I went, what are you talking about? He goes, dude, look, I mean, it's good that you give him a seat, but then you don't have a seat. And I was like, oh, that's how you look at the world. You're a piece of shit. I don't like you anymore.
Yeah.
It's the two times I've not been friends with somebody. I've never done that. Like, I have two friends that I kind of was like, I'm not going to be friends with you anymore.
So has that ever happened to you where someone's called you, like before in your single days, where someone's like, it burns when I pee, here's the situation?
I have had gonorrhea in college. That was a great
time. So it's definitely gonorrhea?
It's
right,
gonorrhea
right?
now. It's gone, but I remember having a drip going, what the hell is this? It was a clap. Doctor's like, you got the clap, kid. But
are you from the 40s?
I'm from the 40s. That's all I am. But I did think I had gonorrhea one time, and I called a bunch of girls before I even got tested because I was convinced I had it because it burned so badly. And it was so embarrassing, but I called him.
Right.
I don't know how many girls. Like, I mean, you know, two or three, you know.
Two or three dozen.
I was single, and two or three dozen. But I just was like, you know, I didn't know how long. I did all this research. I was like, it could incubate for 3 months, so I got to go back, you know. So I go to the doctor, and I had the doctor goes, it went away by the time I got to the doctor. And he got a test. He goes, that's negative. You know, it came back 3 days later or something. I called him up. And I said, well, why was it burning so bad when I peed? He goes, were you eating a lot of hot peppers? And I said, I ate a habanero pepper on a dare, a whole one. I couldn't feel my mouth for an hour. And he said, well, that's exactly what it was, pal, because that a flake probably got in your bladder, but that will also make your pee burn.
Wow.
How about
flake
that?
Flake got in your bladder.
Yes. And
God.
That's what it was. So.
Well,
I don't know.
See,
I don't know if that's anybody's a doctor out there. Tell me if the doctor was right, but that's what happened.
But, you know, the thing is, a friend of mine, I know it sounds weird when I say a friend of mine, but really, really, it was a friend of mine. She said that she had to call her, you know, her gentleman lovers.
Yeah.
And she said, look, I got this. I don't know if I got it from you or if I gave it to you. I was letting you know. And they were so pissed. Like, how dare you think that you got this from me?
Yeah, well, that's where it's all, you know, you can't do that to somebody, man. You know,
but the thing is, it's like when
you have sex, you're going to, some people, guess what? You can catch a bacterial infection called gonorrhea or chlamydia. A lot of people get herpes.
Right.
I know so many people who've had, it's just luck of the draw, man.
Right.
It's just the way it is. It's no shame in it. It's just how it is. You know how many people have something? It's like, give me a break. I have my buddy's 30 years old, and he was having sex with all these women, and he goes, I swear to God, he goes, you know, been having sex a lot when your dick's full of blisters. I swear to God.
Oh,
and I went, what do you mean? And he goes, yeah, I got blisters, you know, but I've been all the rubbing. I go, let me see your dick. He goes, nah. I go, let me see your dick, bro. I go, that, my friend, is called herpes.
You looked at his penis?
And he goes like this. He goes, really? I swear to God, he goes like this. He goes, really? I go, yeah. He goes, ah, shit. He didn't care at all. I was like, all right, well, there you go.
Maybe he had some habaneros. You don't know.
Yeah,
he could have gotten flakes around his dick.
You never know. Maybe he was dry humping asphalt. Who knows?
I had a roommate in college who had crabs.
Yeah, and, you know, I had a friend who had crabs.
When you're in college, you share clothes all the time. And you know how we found out? She left the little crab kit. You know, like it's like almost lice kit. Like she left it in our bathroom. And we're like, who's this belong to?
I don't know. It must have flown in by a bird.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was a rough way to find out.
I never gave a shit. I've never been. I would always just tell people, I don't care.
Right.
You know, I was lucky. I've been lucky. I dodged a lot of bullets, but.
But I think that's a dude thing. Everything for dudes is on the outside. Like, hey, look what I got, right?
Yeah.
Like, if that happened to me, I couldn't have my friend look inside of me. Let me look at your vagina.
Yeah.
Let me look.
Yeah.
You know, everything with us is like a mystery. Everything is like wrapped up in like a fortune cookie. And
but
you're like,
when I called the girl in college, it was actually after college. That's a lie. It was actually after college, if I think about it. It was in New York. When I called the girl, she was so embarrassed. But I was like, listen, man, you know, don't worry about it. It just happens. What are you going to do? I remember that. I didn't want to sleep with her either. I did it to be polite. There, I said that. I never said that out loud.
Oh, jeez.
Hold on. It's embarrassing. I knew something was up. I was like, I don't know.
If you get food poisoning, you call the restaurant where you know for sure that they gave you food poisoning. They're always like, I don't know. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Like, they never want. It's like, yes, dude, I have olestra coming out of my penis. Yes, it's you. It was your pad thai.
You did it, yeah.
And they never want to fess up.
Yeah, well, you know, nowadays you can get sued for it, you know, for injurious, you know, all that mess. You can do whatever you want to people. It's ridiculous.
For food poisoning?
No. Well, yes, food poisoning and for getting a disease from somebody.
Oh, you can't sue
but
the
STD? It wouldn't hold up because you didn't use a condom and all that shit. You're responsible too and all that stuff.
I would love to see a lawyer advertise on the side of a bus.
Yeah.
Herpes? Somebody. Chlamydia? Gonorrhea?
Call me! I'm the STD doctor.
6969696969. Call now.
Yeah.
That would be, I'm sure they'd make a lot of money.
1-800-FUCKING. Bad fucking. We've covered a lot of ground here, Kara.
We have. I feel like we got
we
all the way from Soviet
the
Jew to
of Judaism to STDs. Jesus.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Money, what we do with money. What's the first thing you do? I'm going to give you 10 seconds. I'll give you. You got to spend $10 million, $20 million. Ready? One, two.
I can already tell you.
Three,
you don't have to show off that you
four,
know how to count.
Five.
All right, I've changed my mind six times.
Okay.
No,
six.
I know.
What is it?
I would, for number one, get my parents a house, both of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Then get us a house. But it's like my parents would be first.
So two houses.
Okay, then my in-laws. I would just take care of everybody.
Everybody would get a house.
Everybody, I would take care of them. Whatever bills you have, let's take care of it now. Boom, it's done. Write it off. I'd be like Ryan Seacrest. We pay your bills.
Yeah.
I'd be like a morning radio host.
That's good.
Yeah.
You'd be generous with it.
Absolutely.
So you'd spend it really quickly.
It'd be done. I'd be one of those, scratcher lotto people that's like, and I'm bankrupt and living on the streets doing focus groups.
Yeah, but you're loving your life. What's your husband do?
He's a line producer.
Okay.
Yeah, he works in the film. Is that what you said you worked in?
In the film. I work in the film business.
In the film business.
I work in the motion picture business,
kids.
Yeah,
he does motion pictures.
All right.
Well, it's, okay, reality TV, but it's very, it's motion picture adjacent.
Favorite movies of the year?
I liked American Hustle. And
I did too.
I liked her. I thought it was okay, you know, it's a little
slow.
But
it didn't win anything, did it?
I think it won, like, Best Craft Service.
Yeah. Exactly.
Best Craft.
But that was it, right?
It won something last night.
Yeah.
It did.
But no, not Best
Picture,
not Best Actors.
I think it won a song.
Actors.
Did it win that song, maybe, or something happened with the song? No.
But it won one thing.
And I liked, what else did I see? What else was up for the thing? You know, I thought they were all good.
Favorite movie of all time?
Oh, I'm sorry, but it's Airplane.
Best yeah. Picture.
Favorite
wow.
movie.
It won what?
No, 12 Years
American
a Slave.
American Hustle?
No, 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture.
Yeah, that's right. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. No, her, no. I just love Airplane. It was the first movie that
That's an amazing, I never thought of that, but that was such an incredibly funny movie.
Yeah. When I first
saw
it.
I worked with him, David Zucker.
Who? Oh, really?
Yeah, I did Naked Gun 4 or some shit.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but think about it. Before Airplane, no one... Now there's been a million parodies and, you know...
Incredible.
It was Best Original Screenplay.
Best Original Screenplay. Her. Oh, yeah, Spike Jones. That's right, that's right, that's right.
Yeah. Her won Best Original
Screenplay. But yeah, that was... I just always go to that one because... But also Groundhog Day is probably one of my favorite movies in the world.
Great.
It has everything in it. Everything. Has comedy. It's feeling good. It's romantic. It's everything.
Yeah. I loved it. Ghostbusters, Stripes, Airplane. You saw comedies.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, of course, the go-to Caddyshack.
Favorite actress.
When I was a kid. Favorite actress. Oh, man, that's a rough one. So many good people do good things. Like when I was a kid, favorite actress? I mean, it was Julie McCoy, Love Boat, but that's all I knew.
The Love Boat. I met Gavin McLeod, I think, who was the captain.
Yeah, yeah.
Stubing. And I think he used the word fabulous about 25 times.
Oh, what a sweetie. Describing you, your comedy?
Oh, it's fabulous. You have to go see it. It's fabulous. I was like, all right.
When I was a kid, I saw Robin Williams sit on his head on a couch.
Yeah.
I was done.
Yeah.
I was done. That was it. I was like, what? That's a thing you can do?
Yeah.
Like, you can sit on your head, and that's like a...
He gave you permission. You realized there was somebody else out there who was like you.
I was absolutely beyond... And again, the kids now, they don't realize. I'm not trying to be like a curmudgeon-y, you know, old broad, but it was so different. We had four channels, and that was it. That was your escape.
Yeah.
When I connected with that, I was like, okay, let's do this. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I want to be a struggling comic.
Yeah, all eyes on. I want to be one of the top 100,000 comics in the world. I make up to $10,000 a year.
Exactly.
That's Sam Brown. Did you know Sam Brown?
I did.
Yeah, he was my buddy.
Yeah, I did.
Sam is great.
That
really steal
broke
his
my
jokes.
Heart.
I put his jokes in my stand-up sometimes. Little smidgen just as a little ode to him.
Yeah.
When he was dying, I wrote him a letter. He couldn't really talk, but I was like, listen, you know, now that all your material is gone, do you mind if I take it from you? It was the only way I could, you know. That sucked.
Yeah, yeah. That was...
Did you know him well?
You know, we did a lot of open mics together. So I knew him, you know, like 98, 99, I first started, 2000. We did a lot of those, like, really crappy rooms.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. He was kind of a dick sometimes. Yeah. It's hard to say that about someone who passed away.
He's a difficult guy.
Like, my brother was a little douchey. It sucks to say that about someone who died, but he wasn't always that way. It was just his.
But I love that you say that because that's a classic example of what makes you a comic. You're honest.
It's the truth. Sam and I, last time I saw him, he snubbed me at the Grove.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so, you know, that was the last time.
I love it. I did two podcasts with him as he was dying. It was really interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And I wrote his wife a little note on Facebook. I go, look, you don't know me. I met you once at the Grove.
She's great.
And your husband snubbed me. And, you know, I just wrote her a little thing. I go, look, I'm sure you have a million messages from a million people. And yeah, it sucks that people come out at the worst times. Like when someone has died is when all of a sudden people reach out.
Yeah.
But I want to let you know, I thought he was insanely funny. And, you know, I'm sorry. You don't know what to say in that situation.
Yeah. Well, she handled it with grace.
God, and they have a baby.
Two babies. But she handled it with grace. I knew him. I'll definitely tell his kids, Leo and Max, just how talented he was.
Because
he was a funny son of a bitch.
Yeah, he was. He was just, he had that right amount of anger you need as a comic.
Yeah, he did.
You know, that right amount. But he made things funny. And he had a great smile. So he could smile at the end of a joke that was like, oof, that was aggressive.
Yeah, in many ways, one of the funniest guys I've ever met. Like, back when I met him, the stand-up and stuff he was doing was just unbelievable.
He
was a maniac. Well... Kira, I think we've solved all the problems. Let me see what time
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So if the world just wants to email us and thank us for solving everything.
Right. Where are you going to be, by the way? I know I'm going to be in Minnesota.
I'm going to be in
Bloomington.
Minnesota.
At the House of Comedy. And then
when does this come out?
I'm going to be at Portland, Oregon, March 15th and 16th. 14th and 15th.
Oh, wow. Well, those are good.
We're going to drop this soon.
Okay, well, if you're in Minnesota, what day are you in Minnesota? I don't want to compete with you.
No, you don't have to worry about
March
that.
March 7th, I will be at Crow River Winery, just outside of Minneapolis.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Bloomington So I'll be in Bloomington. You'll be in Crow River.
We'll be in Crow River.
I'll be in Bloomington. That's great. So you're going to be in Minneapolis. So if you guys come down and see us, because we're going to be in the same area.
Yeah, come out, Minnesota. Yeah.
Come see me one night. Come see Kira the next night.
Do it. Or all just right. Come see me. Brian has a house in Abbot Kinney.
Damn it, Kira.
Yeah, Brian has. He can afford. Just come see me. I have a door deal, come see me.
I'm actually going to go. I'm going to go back and play with my bars of gold.
And I'm going to promote my site, which is KiraComedy.com.
KiraComedy.com, ladies and gentlemen.
And for the podcast, it's TheKiraShow.com. Trying to keep it simple. We don't need to bring Sultanovich into the picture.
Sultanovich.
Nobody needs to have Google ask them, are you
the
sure?
The Sultan of Vich.
The son of Sultan. Better recognize.
Really? There
That's what it means.
All right, America. Thank you very much. This has been Brian the Kid Callen. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.